So I started this sermon series telling you to take a breath. We came out of the Gideon series, which was a hard-hitting series. I knew it was. And I knew when we finished this series, we were heading into that study on sin. So I told you to take a breath. This was supposed to be one of those sermons to kind of let you go, just kind of decompress just a moment. But I hope you know that this wasn't just a filler sermon series. I hope you got something out of this. As we talked, we've spent the last 6 weeks, and this is now number seven, talking about this theme called doubt. And this morning, I want to ask you a very serious question. Make sure I'm on. There you go. Do you suffer from I.O.? Not B.O. Okay, make sure you got that right. Do you suffer from I.O.? And you're probably thinking, well, what is I.O.? It's real simple. Do you suffer from information overload? It's a running joke in my house. My kids ask me questions, and I don't know why my kids think I know all the answers. Okay, most of the time I do. I know a lot, but I don't know all the answers to everything. But my kids love to ask me questions. Even now, today, they still ask me questions. And my answer used to be, I don't know. You know what my answer today is? Go Google it. Go Google it. You know, you've got a phone. Go Google it. We live in an information-driven world. It's everywhere. And I don't care whether you're a techie or not, if you're a non-techie person, you're still not immune. Don't believe me? Just wait a few weeks because we are heading into a political season. Man, your phone is going to ring. And they're going to be pushing brochures everywhere you go. You're going to be able to go nowhere. They're not trying to tell you something about something because they want your vote. Interesting enough, they don't usually tell me what they're going to do. They tell me what's wrong with their opponent and why I shouldn't vote for them, because you get what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to put so much information out there that I begin to doubt what I think I know. They want my vote, and so they're willing to just inundate me with information. And sometimes I get so frustrated at our system that I look at it and say, you know what? I don't know who to vote for, so I think I'll just keep my vote to myself, and I just won't vote. I can't sort through all of the information. Here's the better question. Do you suffer from Jesus' information overload? This is what it says in John chapter 21, verse 25. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have enough room for the books that would be written. I work for an information data warehouse, and they released a new statistic this week trying to show everybody how much data they have. The new statistic is if you took all the information on Wikipedia, by the way, that means something to the teenagers and the kids sitting here. You took all the information on Wikipedia and you added it all together and then you multiplied it times 150 times, that begins to touch where the data warehouse I work for stores information. That's how much data they have, 150 times bigger than the internet encyclopedia. It's a lot of information out there. And when it comes to Jesus, well, there are 66 books in the Bible, and there are multiple translations of every book. And sometimes getting those translations to reconcile is kind of challenging. On top of that, there are commentaries from very smart people who tell me what I'm supposed to believe about those particular books. And so there are those that are out there. There are churches that all claim the name of Christ, and well, they all seem to have different opinions on who Jesus was. Then there are people that reject the name of Christ, and well, they have their thoughts and opinions as well. And then we take all of the data and we wrap it into a tool like the World Wide Web, and we put it out there. And honestly, we can read so much stuff that we can get confused about this entire faith thing. I've been there. Did you know there is actually a social media site out there for ministers where they post sermons? And I went out there and just to do a count, there are 144,000 sermons on sermoncentral.com just on the topic of who Jesus is. 144,000 in 44,000 sermons. I could never write another sermon in my life and just preach through that. And I, 144,000. How many sermons do we need to know who Jesus is? Of course, in our quest to know more, in our quest to understand, we can very easily become lost in our sea of data. You ever watch kids these days? You ask them a question. Man, they got the quickest draw in the West. Okay, they can ask 10 questions in the time it takes me to get my phone to power on. That's just the way it is. The information is everywhere. And in that sea, we can begin to drown in our doubts. Too much information. But that's okay. Because if you suffer from Jesus information overload, you are welcome here. Because doubters are welcome. Now, if you take nothing else out of this sermon series, I got two little truths that I want you to put in your brain. I want you to pack them away. I need you to take it into the next sermon series. And really, we need to take it into next year. And the first thing is, I need you to know that doubters, they come in all shapes and sizes. There are calculating doubters like Nicodemus, cautious doubters like Thomas, critical doubters like Martha, confident doubters like Peter, and convinced doubters like Paul. And today we are going to talk about a guy that suffered from Jesus I.O. His name is James. And you're probably wondering, how could he possibly suffer from Jesus I.O.? Well, they didn't have internet. And, well, there were no books at that point written about Jesus. The church was still young, so very basic. And, well, the answer is simple. He literally grew up with Jesus. And James was the critical doubter. But it's the second thing I need you to know about this idea of doubt. Guess what? Even his criticalness over all the information he had, Jesus said, "You're welcome to come in and minister with us." So we're going to start off in Matthew chapter 13, verses 55 through 56. This is one of those sermons. I'm going to warn you now. We're moving a lot of places, and we're going to move kind of in a good little pace here. So you might just have to take notes and go back and read the scriptures, but we're going to go at a good pace here. Isn't this the carpenter's son? Isn't his mother's name Mary? And aren't his brothers James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas? Aren't all of his sisters with us? Where then did this man get all these things? So they are talking about Jesus. And in that little scripture I just read you, you saw the name, right? James. Who is he? He is the half-brother of Jesus. So now I got a question. How many? Everybody, give me your attention. No matter what you're doing right now, look up at me. I got to ask you a question. How many people here are the younger sibling of somebody? All right, here's a question. Be careful, because some of you, your younger siblings are sitting right next to you. How many of you love your older sibling? Oh, wow, okay. Here's the question. How many of you like your older sibling? Boy, you're a better person than me. I love my sisters, but there are quite often many times in our life that we don't like each other. We grew up in the same house, and you would thought sometimes there was a war going on in that house. That's just the way it works. And keep in mind, here is James, and he is going to grow up with Jesus. We sometimes paint Jesus very flat. You know, here he is, it's Mary and Joseph and Jesus, and it's the three of them. Keep in mind, they had lots of kids, and James was the one that came right behind him. Now, he may not have been the first of the kids behind Jesus. Please note, Jesus had sisters too. They just aren't giving names. Sorry, ladies, I didn't write the book, okay? We've talked about why they don't give names. But I also need you to see something. They're also not mentioned in Jesus' family tree. Was Joseph. It says he's the carpenter's son, not Joseph's son. And that's because after Luke 2:41, that was the scene in the temple, Joseph just kind of disappeared. Joseph just goes away, and even at the cross, Jesus left Mary to John, not Joseph. And most scholars believe that Joseph died, probably sometime during Jesus' teenage years. So you get what that means. Jesus would have been the oldest son. And in Jewish culture, When the father dies, the oldest son becomes the leader of the house. Everything goes to him. Rich talked about the inheritance thing. So that meant, think about this just for a minute, that our friend James grew up listening to Jesus. Now, I don't mean he grew up listening to Jesus preach. He grew up listening to Jesus tell him to make his bed. He grew up listening to Jesus tell him to brush his teeth. He grew up listening to Jesus tell him to eat his vegetables. He grew up listening to Jesus give him a curfew. He grew up listening to Jesus do everything. He just had to listen to Jesus over and over and over and over again. How many of you actually like your older siblings? How many of you have ever had the moment when mom and dad are going to go out and they leave older sibling in charge of the house? That usually, yeah, he's like, yeah, me. Yeah, you look like you're a little scared at that thought. I don't blame you. I know you're older sibling. You understand what happens here, right? Having a sibling is one thing. Having a sibling be in charge of you, I don't think so. So James grew up in this environment. Yuck. I love Jesus, but that's a little too much Jesus, don't you think? See, James is listed as the first brother, so he would have been the boy directly behind Jesus. And that means he would have been the boy that was always living in Jesus' shadow. Yuck. So not only do I have to listen to Jesus, that means I also have to listen to everybody tell me how great Jesus is. Well, Jesus got A's on his report card. What's wrong with you? Well, Jesus cleaned his plate. What's wrong with you? Well, Jesus did that, and Jesus did this, and Jesus did. James is coming. I am sick and tired of this guy named Jesus. Of course, it also meant that when Jesus went into ministry, James would have been the one that would have been the son left at home, having to deal with all the family responsibilities. Now, how do you think that was set with James? First, I spend my entire life this guy bossing me and telling me how to live my life. And now he goes out, and he's going to be a minister. He's going from place to place to place. And I'm stuck at home. He's suffering from what I call George Bailey syndrome. He's trapped. The kids are like, who's George Bailey? Ask your parents about the movie It's a Wonderful Life. Okay, you can ask your grandparents about the movie It's a Wonderful Life. But he's stuck. He's there. He's going nowhere. And so he's dealing with this guy named Jesus. You think he's got enough information about Jesus? He knows him. He could have wrote a book on him. And here's the thing. I'm betting James was not exactly the first member of the Jesus fan club. Matthew chapter 12, verses 46 through 50 says, while Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mothers and his brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak with you. He replied to him, who is my mother and who is my brothers? Pointing to his disciples, he said, here is my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven, my brother and sister and mother. And all I can say is, ouch, that one's got a sting. Really, Jesus? Don't you think this Messiah thing is going to your head just a little bit? Really? You talk about honoring your father and mother, and you don't even have time to come outside and talk to us? Really? Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Please, I grew up with the guy. I can tell you everything you ever want to know about Jesus. If you really want a summary of James's relationship with Jesus prior to him becoming a follower, just note, when Jesus was on the cross being crucified, Jesus had to leave his mother to one of his disciples. James was not there. Could you imagine? Their relationship had such a schism in it, he was not even at his own brother's death. Did you see him on the road to the tomb that morning when they were coming to deal with the body? Mary was on her own. James was nowhere to be found. You see, the reality is James did not grow up believing in Jesus. John chapter 7, verse 5 says, for even his own brothers, so really none of them did not believe in him. And I can understand that. You get it, right? Every time they talked about believing in Jesus, they're like, please, I know all about him. I shared a room with the guy. I could tell you whether he has stinky feet in the morning. I could tell you what his breath smells like in the morning. I could tell you what I could tell you everything you ever want to know about Jesus. Messiah? God? Please, he puts his pants on one leg at a time just like I do. What makes him so great? They're suffering from Jesus' information overload. They're having a hard time distinguishing who Jesus is because they just think they know him way too well. Here's the ironic thing. They all became believers after the resurrection. They all joined together constantly in prayer along with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. Plural. So that means all of those guys that grew up with Jesus and were suffering from information overload eventually came to have a relationship with Christ. Somehow they got past the critical doubt in their mind and trying to understand who Jesus is, the person, and they began to understand who Jesus really is. And James, well, he goes on to be a leader in the church, according to Galatians chapter 2, verse 9. James, Cephas, and John, esteemed as pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. They agreed that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. Wow. That's a big switch, don't you think? We went from too much Jesus to now I'm going to be a leader in the church. James did write a book. And when he titled the book and told everybody who he is, this is how James now addressed himself. James, a servant of God and the Lord Jesus Christ. And all I can say is, come on, James. Flash us your street credit for just a minute. Do you know who you are? If I'm going to start a book and I'm James, I write it, James, the dude that grew up with Jesus. Wouldn't that be a catchier title? But now I have a question. What happened? We've got a mystery here that we need to solve. We got to go figure out how does one go from being the critical doubter, the person that had too much Jesus, to being a person that when they were given the chance to write a book about Jesus, they say, I'm a servant. Don't you find that fascinating? Don't you want that information? That's that information overload. That's what I want to know. And what happened? Well, here's what we know. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 7. Then he being Jesus, so we are post-resurrection, it says, then he appeared to James, then all the apostles. So we are very familiar with the Easter story. We get really in love with the Easter story where Jesus walks through the wall and he sees the disciples and he says, look, I am here, I have risen. You know what Paul tells us, right? Before he ever went to the apostles, one-on-one, Jesus went to James. Wow. I think I would have led with that in my book, right? What went on in the private meeting with Jesus? Wouldn't that be a cool story to know? I mean, I want to know. Was just seeing your risen brother enough? Did he just walk in and you bow down and say, okay, I get it now? What was said? Can you imagine what that conversation must have sounded like? I mean, here is James, who spent his entire life dealing with the Jesus equation and rejecting Jesus and walking away from Jesus and even saying, I'm not even going to go to the man's crucifixion. I want nothing else to do with Jesus. And now standing in front of you is your dead brother risen. What kind of conversation would you have? Oh my gosh, I really should have eaten all my vegetables. He's God. Oh my gosh, I wasn't receiving lifelong lessons from just my brother. He's God. You think he said, I don't believe it. I want to touch his hands. I don't know. I got a feeling probably not, but he could have. There he was, that close to Jesus, his risen brother. You think they just hugged it out? You think they just kind of sat there? You know how useful it would be if somebody had actually written all this down for us? Think about all the people. We're celebrating homecoming today. Think about all the people in the sound of my voice. You grew up in church. Man, your mom or your dad were Christians, and your grandma and your grandpa were Christians, and your great-grandma and your great-grandpa, and it goes on and on and on and on. As a matter of fact, you're suffering from a drug addiction. They drug you to church your entire life, over and over and over again. As a matter of fact, the fourth word you learned behind mama, dada, no, was probably Jesus. And you know, those are hard people. Because sometimes they know everything there is to know about Jesus. But then they doubt whether what they know is true. And they become the critical doubters. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, we don't get that hallmark moment with James and Jesus. James never tells us what was said between him and Jesus. I want it, but God says you don't need it. Because you know what that would be, right? Come on, if they wrote the book, we'd write that, take that book, and we'd parse every little jot and tittle, and we'd circle things and highlight things, and first thing you know, we'd start worshiping the book. Right? It's just more information. Now, James's doubt was kind of unique. See, what we do know is James found a way to overcome his information overload. And he had a really unique relationship with Jesus. Not one where Jesus was just the big brother. It's the one where he said, I am a servant of God. And what did he do with that information? Well, keep in mind, he was a little late coming to the party. I got no scriptures from you from the Gospels about James, because James was off doing the James thing at that point. He wanted nothing to do with the ministry of Jesus. We don't find him until, again, we pick him up in Acts, where he became the leader in the church. And well, that's not his main contribution, though. You see, the truth is, James did write a book. Not the book I want. But you know what he did write? He wrote one of the most practical guides of what it means to be a Christian and how to live the Christian life. Matter of fact, if you're new on this journey, this is your book. If you're looking for a place, where can I go in the Bible and start at verse 1 of that book and read to the end and understand everything without all of the these, thous, those, and the confusion that comes with it? James has been called Christianity in blue jeans. It's just flat out practical, common sense. What does it mean to be a follower? Not a lot of information given in it. You know why? Because James had enough of information. James wanted you to understand what it means to be a servant. And here's the ironic thing. Coming right out the chute, he gives his introduction, and when he finishes giving his introduction, you know the first thing James wants to deal with in his book? Doubt. That's what he wants to talk about. Matter of fact, these are the words of James, the half-brother of Jesus. In his know-all, tell-all book, this is what James says about doubt. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives you generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt. Because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. And maybe I read that and think, hey, James, you're being a little critical. And that's a little judgmental, don't you think? You get it, right? James is not writing about our doubt. He's writing about his doubt. If you find yourself lost in the sea of doubt, this is what you need to do. He starts off by saying you lack wisdom. Interesting enough, he does not say you lack information. He does not say go pick up a book and read more. He doesn't say go study more. He says you have to become wise. Now, how do I become wise? Well, James tells us. Right there in the verses I just read you, he says, I don't want you to know more. I want you to take what you know and put it into practice. All right, our kids are with us, and you know what? I know a lot of you play sports. How many of you that play sports like practice? Yeah, don't even. Don't you even raise your hand. I know better. You don't like practice. Why? Because you do the same thing over and over and over. How many times have they got to hit a ground ball to me? I pick it up and throw it to first base. I've done this. I know how to do this. How many times does it take? But you understand why they're telling you to put it in practice, because I could sit out there the entire day and explain to you how to field a ball, how to pick it up, how to put it in your hand, how to throw it. I could go there, I tell them how, but what's the best way to learn how to catch a ball? Go catch a ball. Right? Unless you're playing with my dad. Another story, another time. So what's the best way to become a Christian and to become a faithful follower? Go read some books. Books are good. I'm not saying no information. But you do understand the best way is find a way to take what you do know and put it into action. What do they say? Practice makes perfect. Then he wants us to understand that this entire thing goes without finding fault. So there's a mercy rule in Christian faith that you need to understand when it comes to your doubt. God is not interested in judging you for your past. Really? Not God's interest. When God put all this together, he didn't say, I'm going to keep track of everything that you do, and then when you get in front of me someday, we're going to hold you accountable for all of your past. Now, there is a day of accountability, but this is not God's intent. You know what God did? He said, what I really want to do, he just wants to be a part of your present and your future. See, at the moment you become a follower of Christ, your past is like somebody took a giant pair of scissors and went snip, and your past just floated on away, and now you're free to move forward. Unfortunately, a lot of us, Jesus goes snip, and we reach up there and grab the rope and like, all right, I'm coming. And we tow our whole life with us, and then we're like, I'm exhausted. James is telling us, take advantage of the mercy rule. Take your life and cut it free. He described God as a generous, willing God, willing to be with you, and he does not ever leave. That's important we remember that. In our doubt, God doesn't abandon you. But he does clearly say there is a need to believe versus living in the sea of doubt. You think James didn't know what that sea of doubt felt like? Come on, he spent his entire years there. He spent his kid years there. He spent his teenage years there. He spent his 20s there. He spent his entire life there living in that sea of doubt. And he tells us that you can't live there. You think he knew anything about being tossed about by winds? Oh my gosh. Every time somebody said the name Jesus, he's like, Jesus, 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 Jesus. I wonder how many times he started telling his own stories, trying to convince Jesus wasn't all he was cracked up to be. Everything that came along, he probably pursued anything but Jesus. You think he regretted not accepting his brother before the crucifixion? I don't know. But I got a sneaky suspicion just reading through there in James that he looks back at it and said, you know what? I wasted so much of my life just being tossed, just floating around, when all I really needed to do was simply believe. It's that simple. That which you know, you accept and you believe, and that which you doubt, we'll work on it as we go. That's how Jesus works. If you think you have to know everything to be a follower of Christ, then here's what I'm going to tell you. You're talking to a guy that sometimes doesn't think he knows anything. Because that which I thought I believed when I was in my teens and my 20s, some of those things that I would have fought you about in my teens and my... I figured it out. They're irrelevant. What's relevant is just, who do I think Jesus is? And am I willing to follow? See, James tells us if we just try to swim in the sea of information and just know more about Jesus, it says it's going to make us double-minded and unstable. When I know too much, when I've got too much in my head, I spend all of my time trying to sort out what I know, trying to decide what's right and wrong. That day when you go in November and you're standing there in front of your ballot, if you haven't made up your mind by the time you get the election thing, and you're standing there in front of that place and you're going to cast your vote, and you're like, so let's see, now what did this candidate say? And what did that candidate say? And what promise did that candidate make? And all that. Too much. You can't do that with faith. You've got to decide who Jesus is and then just simply accept what he gives you. And folks, that's some wise words from one of Jesus' biggest doubters. The man that should have had the easiest time in the universe believing in Jesus. No doubt whatsoever. He saw Jesus from the moment James was born all the way through his life. Every single day he had interaction with Jesus. And he still came away with doubt. But Jesus still took the time after the resurrection to come and get face to face with him and say, simply believe. I know it was hard. Too much information. I just need you to know, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through Jesus. It's a one-way street. That's the information you need. And that's what I ask you today to decide. Who is Jesus for you?